This is Nero Feliciano, and welcome to the All Things Life podcast. I'm a wife, a mom of four, and a cognitive psychotherapist. And I'm really excited to share these conversations and interviews with you that will hopefully help you live a healthier, fuller, and more peaceful life. Well, welcome back to the podcast. And today we have a great episode that is very much needed at this time. I have two physicians who are going to talk to us about all of your health-related questions and information that you might need. And the first one is Dr. Sanjay Patel, an internal medicine physician, focused hospitalist, and clinical assistant professor at Ohio University Heritage College of Medicine. He is also the associate residency program director. And I also have on the phone Dr. Chrissy Sacci, who is a pediatrician in private practice in Connecticut and a pediatric hospitalist for Connecticut Children's Medical Center. She is also my baby sister, who I like to feature in my Instagram stories. Right, Chrissy?
Hey, that's right.
So welcome. Welcome, Sanjay.
How are you? Thank you for having us on.
Thank you so much for doing this. I know both of you, this is probably one of the busiest times in your life, in your career. And I just want to start by asking, how are you both doing? I mean, this is unprecedented in your field right now.
It's been okay so far. I think, there's the professional part of my life and the personal part of my life. And though they're partly separate, but partly interconnected. So I have been fortunate and that I haven't been at the hospital too much this last week and a half because I've been on administrative duty, but I have had to go in with a lot of staffing changes and adjusting our residency program and who's going to be in the hospital and who's not in order to protect our medical students and residents. And then at home, kids are off school, so we've been trying to do some homeschooling. At the same time, I still have administrative stuff that needs to get done, and my wife is working. So it's been a challenge. There certainly, with the COVID, there's obviously the physical health that we're trying to take care of, but also the mental wellness health of being quarantined in our house and not seeing anybody except for the four of us and really trying to get accustomed to that because that may be for the weeks and months to come.
And you have two young daughters, right? How old are they?
I do. I have two girls who are 5 and 6. They're in kindergarten and first grade. And so the school has been working with the parents to do some video conferencing, homeschooling curriculum. And so we've been trying to do as much of that at home as we can.
I can't even imagine with what you're dealing with in the hospital. And you also have the same challenges that all of us parents have trying to balance the new normal of now educating at home as well, managing that. So Chrissy, tell me about things with you. How are things going? And you're actually in the hospital quite a bit.
Yeah, I'm in both. I'm in an outpatient practice setting, and then I'm also in the hospital. I think it's been really daunting. It's new for us because obviously we've never dealt with anything like this. And for me, it becomes an issue of keeping myself safe, but also keeping my staff safe. And we just don't have the equipment. It's just not available. The testing is not available. So it's been challenging. And you worry about not only your family, but I work with our mother.
Right.
So there's that. There's always that worry is if she's getting exposed and she's not backing down from practice just yet. So there are a lot of concerns in the hospital, but I actually feel safer in the hospital because we have the proper protective equipment. Whereas a lot of the offices outside of that, it's just not available and everything's on back order. So that makes it even more challenging to try and care for your patients.
So just so you have a little background, Chrissy works in a practice with our mother, who is 72. She's a pediatrician. She does have risk factors such as diabetes and what else does she have, Chrissy? Asthma. So, and when we've asked her to stop working, she said, no, this is why I became a doctor.
There's no HIPAA here. We just shout out medical problems.
no HIPAA right now when it comes to family, right? Both of you are really on the front lines, especially being in internal medicine. And one of the things you told me was this is a day by day process. So tell me kind of what that looks like, trying to get your information day by day to navigate the situation.
Yeah, it's been a challenge, even when I've been at the hospital or whether I've been at home. Our hospital and our health system has an incident command center and a lot of layers of leadership. And there are multiple emails a day. We have COVID playbooks on what hospital protocols are, but those literally change day by day. So on top of those of us who are in the hospital taking care of patients, you also have to keep up with these emails and changes that are going on, because what you are doing one day may be very different than what you're doing the next day. So that part of it adds to the many layers of challenges that already exist with the pandemic that we're dealing with.
Mm. Chrissy, how about you? Have you experienced that too?
I think the hospital outlines their procedures and protocols really well, and you have a team of people coming up with solutions or ways to keep staff and patients safe. And right now there's no visiting or taking temperatures at the door, so they're enforcing all those protocols really strictly. For our office, it's a little different because we don't have a board or a team that's coming up with ideas. So it's really left up to us as the physicians to make those decisions. We're having patients wait in their car until we have a room available for their appointment. We're trying to encourage people who are sick to stay home. We're triaging everybody by phone. We're starting to use more telemedicine. So we're coming up, again, like Sandri said, we're coming up with these things as we go, and they're changing day by day. So it's been difficult.
I'm sure challenging. And also now you're also starting to see doctors become exposed as more people come in with COVID-19. So Chrissy, can you tell us a little bit about your situation right now?
Present company. Yeah. I have been seeing some patients, and the scary thing about this is, especially in the pediatric population, we are not seeing symptoms. And we're seeing very mild symptoms. So you don't see these bilateral pneumonias. You see maybe a sore throat, or you see a cough or congestion. We really don't know how it's going to present. And it turns out one of the patients I had seen a few days ago had hugged her uncle prior to the visit. And he was actually in the office. I didn't know about that. And he tested positive for COVID. So now it's a matter of, you know, determining, am I spreading this to other people? Do I have to get tested? And now these are the challenges when it spreads to healthcare workers, because we're in contact with everybody.
And I think that's so important to know, especially for the people who still have kids who are out there doing play dates and sleepovers, that this can affect everyone. And especially once it starts affecting our healthcare workers, it becomes even more serious, right?
Absolutely.
So you're waiting it out and just waiting to see if you get tested. Now, I think we should talk about testing and who can get tested and what should we do? So if you think you have symptoms, what is the process?
For us, our hospital has our health system has a nice outline of symptoms. So the first thing we want, and the first thing we want to convey to all of our patients, is if you are sick, in any other situation, we say, if you're sick, go to the emergency room or go to an urgent care center. This is a situation where we do not want you to do that. We want you to call first, and so that somebody on the phone can triage you to the appropriate center or testing area in order for you not to show up somewhere and expose a broader population of people who weren't otherwise going to be exposed.
So don't run to an ER, call first.
Call first. So our hospital has a number of phone numbers, and not just our health system, but other health systems in the area and all over the country. You can easily go online, find that number, call that number first, and they will triage you over the phone and put you in contact with either a primary care doctor or an emergency room physician who can then triage you. I know in our health system, just a few days ago, anybody with respiratory symptoms, even if you show up to the ER, you actually aren't allowed into the emergency room. You actually have to go to a tent outside first, and then they'll decide if you are somebody who needs to be tested and go through the testing process, or if you are there with respiratory symptoms that are not consistent with COVID but still need to be in the hospital, and then get into the emergency room to then start getting your care.
Right, because you have just people who are sick who need to be in the hospital as well.
Exactly.
I think that's what the mistake people make is that I'm sick and I have to rush and see my doctor. I have to rush to an emergency room. And especially in my world with pediatrics, parents are fighting for their kids. So they think their child is sick and they're rushing them to see a doctor. And we had a woman come into the office the other day who child has flu-like symptoms, which could be anything, could be COVID, could be flu. But those are patients that we don't want to see in the office. Unless you're having respiratory distress, that's the only reason you should be going to the emergency room. Otherwise, you need to call your provider or call the emergency room to be tested, but do not show up, because the amount of people you can infect by being sick and being around all those people is far worse. And the testing, there's strict protocol for testing right now.
And what is that protocol? What is that protocol? Because people think, okay, if I have symptoms, I can get tested, but that's actually not the case.
For us at Danbury Hospital right now, you have to have symptoms consistent with what looks like the flu, and you have to either have travel or either have been in contact or have a known contact.
So some sort of exposure with someone who has
some sort of
confirmed positive.
And you also need a prescription from a doctor. So they will not just test you if you have those symptoms. You need a written prescription or an electronic prescription sent from a doctor that says, yes, this patient needs this test. So both of those things have to happen. And it's mainly because the testing is so limited that they're putting those guidelines out there. So they're not testing everyone who has contact. It's those people who have symptoms. And that's how testing works as of right now. Whether we can expand testing, that's to be determined.
Okay. And does it work the same where you are in Ohio, Sanjay?
Yes, very similar. You are being asked to give what symptoms you're having. Fever, cough, and shortness of breath seem to be the main hallmarks, but also then need to have that phone provider direct you specifically to a testing center. And like Chrissy said, which I do want to stress a little bit, a lot of these protocols are being driven by the lack of testing and the long turnaround times with testing. Mm-hmm. And I think from a public health perspective, one of the largest issues is that we're very likely missing a lot of people who have minimal to no symptoms, and in particular healthcare workers who are on the front lines, where the testing threshold really should be much lower for them.
So basically what we can do is not rush to the ER, make the call first. We don't want to overwhelm a system that's already overwhelmed, and then do our own part by staying in. And I think everything that you're saying just lends more to the message that we have to reinforce to people to stay in. Don't make trips. Don't gather unnecessarily unless you really need to, because this is the end result of what happens as this virus spreads. So tell us, because there's so much information out there and we're constantly getting information in daily updates, hourly updates on different pieces that also are new pieces of information. And it's hard to know what to believe. So what sources do you both recommend that we should go to get accurate information?
Apart from local health systems and or hospitals, local health departments are putting out public information. State health departments, obviously the CDC and the WHO. There is a lot of stuff on the internet, and certainly take everything you read with a grain of caution, even news stories and things that you see on CNN and so forth. But the public health departments are the ones that are going to be giving you the up-to-date statistics and the up-to-date recommendation on what's going on. If you are a healthcare provider, there's actually an amazing amount of information on Twitter, MedTwitter, actually the hashtag COVID-19. Be careful of who you follow, because anyone can obviously use that hashtag, but there are a lot of health professionals who are using that and sending out updates minute by minute.
Great to know. And can anyone look at that, or is it quite technical?
Yes. Anybody who's on Twitter, I've have a Twitter account separately and use it only for medical education and medical purposes and use other platforms for social interaction. But it's been a great way to get up to date and a great way to connect with providers in other parts of the country, knowing what their experiences are and how to adjust accordingly wherever you are.
Great. So one of the questions that I had, because this was one of those new pieces of information that came out, is that we shouldn't take ibuprofen. Instead, we should take Tylenol or acetaminophen. Can you speak to that? Is that true?
I think we've talked about this, and we have all of us, I think we have group chats with our friends and other physicians that we know, and we talk to each other a lot. So we're always in communication. And I think we talked about this, and there is some evidence that maybe suggests, and then there's evidence that doesn't. So right now everything is kind of, we're trying to guess, good guesses, but we're trying to guess just based on whatever evidence is available to us, which there's not a lot of it. Sanjay, I'm not sure how you're dealing with your patients who are on ACE or ARB, because I really don't have any who are on those kinds of medications. But for my patients, unless there's some pre-existing kidney issues, we're not heavily enforcing the no Motrin, no Advil rule.
Right. And our patient population certainly is one with lots of comorbidities. And the ACE ARB one comes up probably more than the ibuprofen one. But just to address both, as Chrissy said, there's a lot of information on there. There are a lot of rapidly churned out studies. I mean, we're talking about evidence-based medicine that's come out in a span of 3 months or so since this pandemic has gone global, and how much of it and how accurate it is, no one really knows. I think take everything that you read with a grain of salt. I always, whether it's this or anything, always approach with your patient in terms of risk-benefit. If there's an absolute need for that particular medication and the benefit outweighs the risks, then continue it. But if it's something that, you know, they're taking ibuprofen just for, I don't know, osteoarthritis or something, maybe that's something that we could find an alternative for temporarily if they happen to be COVID positive, and then they can resume their medication. So it's really got to be a discussion with the patient, trying to keep up with the most up-to-date evidence, though I know some of that is limited.
Sure. So have the discussion, speak to your physician about it. If it's absolutely not essential to take ibuprofen, take acetaminophen, unless you really need it.
Right.
Okay. Now, one thing that we're going to see are people getting diagnosed with COVID-19 and maybe having symptoms, whereas other people in the house may not. So how do you care for a person in your home who may be showing symptoms and now you're all quarantined together?
Yeah, I think that that is going to be an extremely important thing that's coming up. Particularly Chrissy, yourself and I, as we're in the healthcare field, especially with your recent exposure, this may become reality very soon that all of us are going to be exposed and inherently mm-hmm. going to expose our families. I think it's the same precautions that we are telling the masses, you know, obviously being clean, sterilizing surfaces, washing your hands. If you are positive at home, your entire family should stay quarantined. The person who is positive should try to stay in a room specifically quarantined by themselves. I've heard and read stories of people holed up in their room and the family is bringing them trays of food, leaving it at the door, and then they're finishing and then putting it in a plastic bag and giving it back to the family. I'm on a group text message with Chrissy. I was telling her that two very good friends in Chicago, one's an ER doc and one's a hospitalist, both were recently tested positive. And in speaking with both of them, they're doing very similar things. I know one who's actually one of my best friends is a hospitalist, has two young kids like mine and wife, and they are in the house and he is basically holding himself up in a room and self-quarantining in the context of family quarantine. So it's a challenge, what you're trying to do is minimize the risk to your family and the community.
Wow. I mean, these are situations that these are the realities and really your reality as you continue this work on the front lines. Are you both, are any of you fearful? Do you feel fear about this?
I don't really worry about myself. I feel like as a pediatrician, I've come into contact with probably every single virus that you could imagine. So I feel that my symptoms may not be full blown, but I fear that if I carry this, and I think we all fear this, if we carry it to our kids or we carry it to our parents, then are we inadvertently causing our other family members to get sick? And I think that's a real fear for me, at least, and especially being that I do work in such close proximity with my mother. I think that's definitely my biggest fear.
Sanjay. Yeah, I echo what Chrissy said. I think the fear there is for me personally, but not necessarily unlike anything else that I deal with on a day-to-day basis. We went into this profession knowing that there are risks every day, bloodborne pathogens, mm-hmm. tuberculosis, things like that, that are still out there. This is just the newest thing that's out there. But mm-hmm. I fear more for my family, my parents, my kids, the community. And I think that's why we are doing what we're doing. And that's an important message. You've seen obviously heard the terms of social distancing, trying to flatten the curve. For many of us, we're not doing that for ourselves. We may contract COVID-19 and we generally will do fine, hopefully. But we're doing that for our community. We're doing it for everybody. And so I think that's an important message to convey, in that this is, at this point, it's not about me. This is about us as a community, mm-hmm. and how we deal with this and how we prevent the spread and how do we reduce complications associated with this pandemic.
And it's also about not overwhelming the healthcare system with tons of sick people at once. We have a certain capacity that we can take care of. And by flattening the curve, you're spreading that out over a period of time. It doesn't mean that we're going to completely stop the spread of this disease, but we may be able to handle it better if it's spread over a period of time versus an influx of sick people all at once.
That, I think that's so important. And that's why we can't get this message out enough, especially when we're still seeing people who haven't embraced it. So I'm so thankful to have your perspectives on that, and for people to see what the reality of your lives are and how you're putting yourselves at risk just for the benefit of our community. There is a lot of fear out there, and especially as a therapist, I've been seeing more and more of it with my patients, but also friends and other people who've contacted me. Is there anything positive or hopeful that we can hold on to from your perspective?
I think the positivity lies in us. I think if you look around at your friends and family, ourselves included, we are buying into the social distancing, into doing whatever we can to help and support each other. And I think that in and of itself, from a non-medical perspective, is positive, that we are all in this together. This isn't that group of people or this group of people. This is us. All of us are here together. We are all staring at each other through our windows in our house because we're all self-quarantined. But I think that is a positive message, that we aren't going to, somebody isn't going to solve this. We're going to all solve this together.
Mm-hmm. It really has connected us in a different way, even through the distancing. Chrissy, what are your thoughts?
Absolutely. I think we have to pull from the experiences of other countries, and you see all these videos of people in Italy and they're still managing to have these social interactions, but from their balconies, and they're having dinner together and they're enjoying music together, and they're still able to have a sense of community through these times. And I think those are really important things to pull from, because I think you can still have that. And I think you've echoed that too. In your last podcast, you've talked about how people have always wanted more time and they've wanted to see their families more. Now they're getting that time. So yeah, you're in your house and you might be cooped up, and there may be things that come in that you have to deal with that you didn't have to deal with before. But I think seeing that from that lens of, okay, these are, this is my family. This is the family that I don't get to see for 8 to 10 hours a day. And now I get to see them for this period of time, for however long it lasts. And I think viewing it from that different lens will change your perspective a little bit.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, looking at through that lens, you know, I've never spent so much quality time with my family. My house has never been so organized. It, you know, take advantage of the time that you have.
Yep. Well, I know what keeps me hopeful and inspired is seeing the bravery that people like both of you demonstrate daily, just putting yourselves on the front line for all of us. So I want to tell you that we are thinking of you both. We're praying for you, for your protection. And thank you so much for just taking this time to talk to all of us today. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Nero, for having us.
Okay, Chrissy, want to do my outro today. So Chrissy, take it.
In my best Nero Feliciano voice, until next time, be well and live full, but stay your at home.
There goes my G rating. Okay, that's a wrap. Thank you both. Stay safe.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye.
Thanks for listening today. And if you have a second, go on the Apple Podcast app and rate this podcast. I want to know what you liked and what you didn't like and what you want more of. And connect with me. I'd love to hear from you on any of my social media at Nero Feliciano, the Incidental Therapist on Facebook, and Nero Feliciano on Instagram. And you can also connect with me through my website, Nero Feliciano. So until the next time, have a great day, be well, and live full.